Carla, if you could read 1060, please.
Authorized intergovernmental agreements and grant agreements in support of the lead hazard reduction program for 5 years beginning fiscal year 2019-20 in an amount up to $425,000 per year and increase the annual not to exceed authorized amount for fiscal year 2018-19 to $395,000.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, President Saltzman. As the new commissioner in charge of the Water Bureau, this is a really fascinating topic. Thank you, Owen. And thank you, Commissioner Fish, for your excellent stewardship of the Water Bureau over the last 5+ years. Lead in the water is obviously something that we're all concerned about, that we want to make sure that we have safe drinking water. And as we know, the source drinking water in the Bull Run and in groundwater is lead-free. What's interesting, or there's many interesting things about this, and I'll get to the presentation shortly. I hope everybody else will be interested also. In 1960, the acceptable level of lead exposure was 60, and I forget what the units are on that, but in 2010, it dropped to 8, and it's now 0. So as we've become more aware of the issues, it's become even more crucial that all of us are aware of lead hazards and what we can do to reduce them. And one something that I've learned, which I'll say now and at the end, is all users in Portland may be at risk for this, and so all of us need to take universal precautions. And so with that, I will turn it over to Scott Bradley, the Program Manager of the Water Bureau's Water Quality Division, and Gabe Solmer, the Deputy Director.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Fritz. I'm Gabe Solmer. I'm the Deputy Director of the Water Bureau, and with me is Scott Bradway, who's our Water Quality Information Program Manager. And although that this is just a reauthorization of a contract, we thought we would take the time to give you a little bit more information about the program and how it's been built over the years and how it's changing in the future. And I'll turn it over to Scott.
Thank you, Gabe. Thank you, Commissioners. Again, Scott Bradway with the Portland Water Bureau. So, first, to put this ordinance in context, I thought I'd start with some background on lead, particularly in Portland. So here in Portland, we're fortunate that we never use lead service lines. This is generally a source of lead in drinking water that we hear about throughout the country in the news and the media. We did, however, use for a period of time short lead pipes called pigtails or goosenecks. We removed all those known pigtails back in the 90s. So that leaves us as the main source of lead in water, drinking water in Portland, to be copper pipes that were joined with lead solder in our homes. And this is most commonly found in homes in our area that were built between 1970 and 1985. In addition to the lead solder, you also occasionally find that home plumbing fixtures that were installed prior to 1985 can also be a source of lead in drinking water. However, the important part is that the greatest source of exposure to lead in our community is from lead paint. Lead paint was commonly used on homes and all the way up until 1978 when it was banned. Throughout the years, the Portland Water Bureau has been working to remove lead from our system. We worked with the state of Oregon in 1985 to pass the Oregon lead ban, which was about a year ahead of the federal regulations. As I mentioned, in the 90s, we worked to identify and remove all of the pigtails from our system. And then in the 2000s, we realized that some of these large meters in our system, these older large meters, had some lead components to them. And so we made it a priority to identify, remove, and replace these meters that serve our populations that are at highest risk. So that would be schools, communities, community centers, daycares, large apartment buildings, and hospitals. So when it comes to lead in drinking water, there was a federal regulation, the Lead and Copper Rule, passed in 1992. This required drinking water systems to provide corrosion control treatment to reduce the levels of lead and copper in drinking water. In 1994, the Portland Water Bureau completed an optimized treatment study. The recommendations of that study were to increase the pH of our drinking water to 9.0 and to begin treating for the addition of alkalinity to as our optimized corrosion control treatment. However, this would have required the construction of an expensive new treatment facility. And considering what was believed at the time that lead and paint was the greatest source of exposure and contributing to childhood lead poisoning, City Council directed the Water Bureau to investigate alternatives for a comprehensive approach to addressing exposure to lead. In 1997, the Water Bureau proposed a comprehensive lead hazard reduction program that was approved by the state as optimized corrosion control treatment and has served as our compliance approach to this regulation since that time. The lead hazard reduction program is a four-part program. It includes water treatment and monitoring, education and testing for lead in water, public education and community outreach for all sources of lead in the community, and the funds for that public education and outreach are then used as matching dollars for a Housing Bureau grant from Housing and Urban Development to mitigate lead paint hazards in low-income residents. This graph here demonstrates the results of our regulatory monitoring that we complete twice each year. As you can see in the yellow bars on the left of the graph, that is before we began treating our drinking water. Since treating the blue bars, you can see we had significant reduction of lead in drinking water, more than 60% levels of lead. So we've had some success with our lead in drinking water. But the red line that you can see across there represents the action level that was established by the federal regulations for lead in drinking water, and that we are occasionally over that action level. But note that these results are not results from the average home in our community. These are from homes that where we know they have lead solder in them, that the lead solder was put in the last 2 years before lead solder was banned, and that these samples are collected at the after a minimum of 6 hour stagnation time. So they are indeed the worst of the worst of the worst conditions for collecting samples and are meant as a way to track the effectiveness of treatment and not represent the lead and water levels in the community as a whole. The other part of our program is our education and testing about lead and water. We provide any customer requested a free lead and water test kit to test their home to see if they might be being exposed to lead and water. As you can see from this graph, in 2015 and 16, when lead and water was in the news because of Flint and what was going on with Portland Public Schools, the number of requests from our customers skyrocketed. Since then, we've continued to do extra outreach and education to our customers. While those levels of requests have come down, we are still seeing a much higher level of requests than normal. In addition to providing free testing to our customers, we also do education. We also do free testing for schools. We've tested all of our city-owned facilities, and we're providing free testing to child cares to meet the new state-mandated regulations for child care testing. We also perform outreach to our customers. We educate our customers on how they can, on simple steps they can take to reduce their exposure to lead. We reach out to who is most at risk. Those are children and pregnant people and people who live in homes between 1970 and 85. Again, these are homes that are most likely to have lead solder in their plumbing. And we've been doing outreach to multifamily units as they don't normally receive a bill from the Water Bureau. Each year we include a message on our bills and insert a brochure into each of the bills to educate people about lead and water. And we include information in our annual water quality report that is sent to every home in the city. Other outreach we do to try to reach out to traditionally underserved communities is we attend community events such as at Fix-It Fairs, Sunday Parkways, Home Buyer Fairs, Jade Market, and Good in the Hood. And this just kind of shows a summary of results of the home testing that we've performed. As you can see, when you're looking at all homes across the city, the average lead content, lead in drinking water level, and again, these are worst case tests after first thing in the morning after the water's been sitting in the pipes all night. The average level is about 2 parts per billion, and only about 2% of homes exceed that federal action level. But when we look at what we've identified as our high-risk homes, those built between 1970 and 85, you can see indeed that they are at increased risk, but that's still about an 8% of those homes that exceed the lead in action level.
And just pause right there. We go back right there, because I wanted to point out to my colleagues and people watching at home that even if your home was built before 1970 or after 85, your risk is not zero.
Exactly.
So for those of you like me who thought, well, my home was built after that, I'm good, that we do need to pay attention to things like cleaning the aerators in the faucets and looking to see whether we've got brass fittings because there's lead in brass, those kinds of things. So.
Exactly. Until 2014, you could still have up to 8% lead in brass components. So while that was considered lead-free, it was still present. So the third component of our lead hazard reduction program is our community education and outreach. This is a multifaceted approach to educate our citizens and customers about all the sources of lead exposure. This includes, since 2004, there's a list of accomplishments of things we've done, outreach to tenants, attending workshops, landlord outreach, soil testing, information to new and expecting mothers, blood level testing. It's a wide-ranging, broad program. For this coming year, or this current year, fiscal year 2018-19, we've awarded grants to the Communities Alliance of Tenants to perform outreach to tenants about the hazards of lead and how they can work with their landlords to remediate those hazards. Community Energy Project to provide workshops to the community on reducing exposure to lead. Fair Housing Council to provide outreach to landlords about their responsibilities for lead exposure. Growing Gardens to perform testing in soils for gardeners. Multnomah County Health Department, they manage the lead line, which is an information referral service for all sources of lead, as well as intaking many of our lead and water test requests. They also perform education, they perform community blood lead level testing, and they perform home investigations when there is an elevated blood lead level case in a child. And then we provide funding to Portland Public Schools for paint stabilization projects in those schools that serve children under six and early education facilities. As Commissioner Fritz mentioned, the kind of level of concern for blood lead levels has been coming down over the years. In the 90s, when our this program, the LHRP, was developed and put into place, that level of concern was around 10 milligrams per deciliter. And since then, we've learned that there is no safe level of exposure to lead in water or to any sources of lead. As a result, we realize there's an increased health benefit to further reduce the levels of lead in drinking water. So in 2014, we began a water quality corrosion study. The outcomes of that study had several recommendations. Those included doing some interim lead reduction actions to further increase the pH of our drinking water to 8.2, which is the highest we can currently go with our existing treatment facilities, that we should perform a corrosion control pilot study to look at further increasing our treatment and construction of treatment facilities to further reduce lead in water. And we entered into a compliance schedule for that improved corrosion control treatment that should be in place no later than April of 2022. Earlier this year, we completed that corrosion pilot study. The recommendations from that study were to further adjust the pH of the drinking water and begin adding alkalinity adjustment to stabilize that pH throughout our system. That pH adjustment recommendation was to increase it to 8.5 and to add an alkalinity level of 25 milligrams per liter. This will be done by the addition of soda ash as well as carbon dioxide. These treatment facilities will be constructed at our current Lusted Hill facility that's outside of Sandy. And then finally, until those facilities are in place, we'll be doing an interim lead reduction plan. So these are extra actions to try to further protect the public from exposure to lead in drinking water. As mentioned, we've increased our pH to 8.2. We're performing targeted flushing in areas of poor water quality to maintain higher levels of quality and reduce corrosion. We're increasing our unidirectional flushing program significantly to flush built-up sediments in our system that will also help with reduction of lead in water.
Do you explain what unidirectional flushing is?
Yeah, so as an unfiltered system, while our water looks perfectly clear, there are very fine sediments that kind of come into our system and over the years have settled out into our pipes. These sediments, as they build in, can affect the water quality in areas where the water sits for extended periods of time. It can decrease the pH, making it slightly more corrosive. So by going in and doing what we call unidirectional flushing, and that's where you adjust the valves in the system to increase the flow velocity of the pipes, the flow water out through hydrants, you can actually clear those built-up sediments out. It's kind of like a pressure washing of the inside of our pipes. So it really clears out those built-up sediments that have been in our system for a long period of time. We're also doing some enhanced education and outreach. As I mentioned, we're reaching out to multifamily units. We've begun sending an insert to any customer that moves to Portland and opens up a new account, or if you just move to a new home within Portland, informing you about the hazards of lead in drinking water and what you can do to reduce your exposure and request a test. And, of course, we're going to be continuing our lead hazard reduction program as our compliance until our treatment is in place. And with that, if you have any questions.
Okay, no questions. Anybody signed up to testify or anybody?
One person, Shedrick J. Wilkins.
Okay, come on up.
I believe that lead is very toxic and we should get to the point where we don't even mine it. I think lead comes from an ore. One thing though about lead, it's very good to protect from radiation like x-rays, lead vests. MRIs emit radiation, and so I think if we do get this lead pipe and stuff like that, we should encourage maybe a Portland entrepreneur to make lead vests. When you get this lead, make sure you know where it's at. I think that's one thing about lead pipe. Nobody knows where it's really at. You have to get in the wall, find it, and stuff like that. That it's not necessarily it's a toxic material that can be used for good things. I'm not the one that runs out of the room when I get a dental x-ray and I put on the little dealy pop, but it's important to know where it's at. And I also know this, that it's very bad for children to drink lead or toxic materials. The federal government's got some good solutions. If you're on food stamps and you're a child, you can get bottled water. Because I can buy bottled water on food stamps sometimes. It's a little thing. I mean, I go around when I get food stamps, see what I can buy, what I can't buy. I can't buy alcohol. Children should be encouraged who are on low income, which means are probably in a house which is rented or some house with lead pipes, to please drink water from food stamps. And then when they go to school, target the schools, because schools also are where kids drink the water. And so I'm just giving you a federal solution. You can also buy candy on food stamps, but anyway, which means you go to the dentist with the lead vest. So on that one, though, children also have a smaller body mass. It's their system is not well developed to get rid of lead out of their body. That's why it causes mental retardation. Our bodies are much larger. So, you know, help the children first. And please drink bottled water, whether it's free or not.
Actually, if I could ask a question of Scott, you know, that prompts a question. What we learned a few years ago is that the water fountains in our school districts were the greatest at risk because they had, because of the plumbing features. Am I correct that I read somewhere that at least at Portland Public Schools they've completed replacing all the at-risk water fountains?
They are definitely working through all of them, and most of them are back online, or at least I believe a fountain in every school that's accessible to the children is back in service and available. So they're back drinking tap water, no longer drinking the bottled water provided by the schools.
And the second question I wanted to ask you is, one of the charts that you gave us showed the spike when Flint happened, and there was a lot of press about, you know, water safety. But the bar showed that we tested much fewer than the requested. So how do you explain the delta?
We mail out a test to anyone who requests it, and it's then up to the customer to actually complete and return that test.
Oh, I see. So we had 14,000 or whatever requested, but of those who then submitted, we did all the tests for people
correct.
That submitted.
Correct. Yeah, we test any sample that gets returned back to us, you know, assuming it's you know collected in a proper manner. And then we usually see about 50 to 60% return rate of our test kits that are sent out.
Well, also, colleagues, we had a presentation over the summer about Project Search and our efforts to create opportunities for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And there was a young woman who, from that program, was responsible for packaging all the materials that we send to people, including the testing kit. And she really did a great job, and I think on some days got more than 100 of the packages fully stuffed and ready to go. So It's an example of where taking something that we do in a bureau, carving it out, creating a work opportunity for someone with a disability results in a win-win. So thank you for an excellent report.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you very much. And this moves to a second reading next week.
Before you move on, could I just make some comments? Thank you very much. I want to stress that there are things all of us can do to reduce lead hazards, and that once you do those things, the water is entirely safe to drink, and I would not waste your food stamps on buying bottled water, besides which bottled water tastes nasty, and our bottled run water doesn't. So learn the things that you can do. There are various grants that are available through, as was listed, the Community Alliance and Tenants and others. I personally am going to be doing more diligent flushing of my pipes in the morning and cleaning up my faucet aerator, which has not been done in at least 30 years. Back in the olden days when I did my nurses training, we didn't always wear gloves when working with patients, and then what we termed universal precautions came in, that you don't know what you don't know, and so you wear gloves when you're doing patient care. And similarly, we need universal precautions in our drinking water, despite the fact that it is safe to drink in most instances, as long as you do what you're supposed to do. I do also want to thank the Water Bureau for those grants, including $50,000 a year for 5 years to Portland Parks and Recreation to help with their remediation efforts. And I noted in an email just last week that all of the paint, even the paint that's covered up in playground equipment in the Portland Parks and Recreation system, has now been removed if it ever had lead in it. And that's a great accomplishment. So we do learn by the mistakes of the past, at least we should. And I very much appreciate this approach and all that you've taught me in just the last month.
I'd like to make a comment. Sure. Yeah. As we move forward with considering mandatory inspections for rental properties, I just want to put on the record that we should certainly include lead testing, especially for the multifamily developments, which, as we've heard, typically won't receive a water bill and get a lot less information and notice about this issue.
Thank you. I'm glad you mentioned that. That was on my list of things to say, because we're looking into that. And unfortunately, what happens now with the point of sale is that because there might be lead in any structure, sellers just check the box that there might be, which isn't really all that helpful. And so we're looking into how could we get to those homes that are most at risk and make sure that not only new homeowners, also renters, are notified at the point of lease, and not just with a check box, there may be lead in this thing. So obviously we're thinking along the same lines. Thank you.
Okay, great. We'll move on to our last item.